Man, I was just thinking how different this week would be if that ball goes through the uprights.
Good Lord, we'd be in misery the whole week.
We'd be talking about Cliff Kingsbury.
We'd be talking about, is the coach on his way out this week? That's what we'd be talking about. Was that the nail in the coffin? Is Aaron Rodgers done?
All of that would be topics on the table. Instead, we're getting ready to hear from Mike Tomlin for a playoff game, and it's a mighty interesting one. And when I hear somebody as football learned as Nick Faribault tell me that the Texans' offensive line is, quote, putrid, man, that just makes me like the Steelers' chances. It really does. If they can keep C.J. Stroud from popping a few big plays down the field against those safeties, and that's the position that might worry me more than anything going into the playoffs here, then I think the Steelers have a great chance to win this game.
We'll see if the coach agrees.
Good afternoon. Quickly, I'll give a quick assessment of our last performance. As I told the team yesterday at our 2 o'clock meeting, we did some things in-game that were really awesome, and we did some things that were JV, to be quite honest with you. And not only from a playing perspective, but I just thought from a strategic perspective. There was growth opportunities there. I thought that's why it was important that we get in here yesterday and analyze the tape and learn from it. It's always provides a good foundation for our next plan. And so that's what yesterday was about. In review of the game, quickly I'll assess the phases. I thought in general in all three phases we had appropriate physicality. Certainly physicality is a component of the rivalry. And I thought particularly as the game we're on, we had the necessary physicality to produce victory. In the special teams game, I thought penalties slowed our efforts. In the kickoff return, I thought we were really good from a field position perspective. But we had one ball out beyond the 40. They got negated by a penalty. We had a penalty on our punt team as well. Thankfully, on a re-kick, Corliss did an awesome job on the re-kick. And that doesn't always occur. And so we're thankful for that. But if we're going to continue on in this tournament as the road gets narrow, we certainly can't be penalized in that phase of the game. And particularly from a return perspective, negating the chance of any field flipping plays or any significant plays that way. We just can't run the risk of that. I've been pleased with our punting and gunning in the punt phase. It's been minimal return yards. Really over the course of the season, we've had minimal return yards. I think we got 170 return yards in the punt return game in 17 games, and that's certainly solid. And I think Sunday night was reflective of that as well. On defense, I thought largely down in and down out, we did what we needed to do to minimize the impact of Derrick Henry. It certainly didn't start that way. He broke that big run early. That's a credit to him. It's a credit to them strategically in terms of identifying a schematic that they wanted to assault us with. But I just thought down in and down out, we did what we needed to do schematically in terms of allocating our guys and planning the appropriate front structure. And I think in turn, our guys did what was required of them. We put a lot on our men up front. We create one-on-ones with our bigs up front. We require our bigs to win those battles. And I just thought guys like Benton and Hayward and Harmon did a real nice job of winning those one-on-ones, shedding blocks and getting in on tackles, not giving him clean access to the second and third level, which oftentimes is a recipe for disaster when facing the big runner. We certainly took some schematic risk in an effort to minimize Lamar's talents in the game, and I think we suffered the consequences from that at times. We overplayed maybe some design runs, and we put ourselves in some thinned out coverage circumstances, but that's what you do when you plan and plan to win. In the analysis of it, we'd probably do it again, to be quite honest with you. That's the type of challenges that guys like him put you in terms of decision making. But certainly we've been in the stadium against those guys a bunch, and we just felt like we couldn't allow him to run wild. When you do that, you got multiple problems. And so we chose a hill to die on, if you will. Thankfully, we didn't, although they did hit some big plays on us, particularly in possession down moments where we were allocating the appropriate number of people.
limits.
Joe, I think we lost the signal. Let me try to fix this here.
I know we lost the signal. It seems rather obvious at this point.
Well, we found our footing offensively. I thought our ability to get stout after those first two drives and get stops and minimize them probably more than anything on possession downs was a significant component of the game. On offense, I thought, you know, once we got our footing and got going, we stayed in that general direction. Can't say enough about the two running backs. They were impactful. They were impactful in the run. They were impactful in the check down game, winning one-on-one opportunities in the flat and so forth, and turning short gains into longer ones. And that, quite frankly, has been a recipe for how we functioned all year, those two guys and their ability to win in the flat and win in check down-like circumstances. I thought that was significant. I thought also, as the game we're on, our third down conversion rate, and particularly our ability to win some longer ones. We converted a third and 10, a third and 9, a third and 8, I think all in the second half. And I thought that those were building blocks of ball possession and scoring drives. And certainly the efforts of Aaron Rodgers is always helpful. As we've talked a lot in these environments and circumstances, he's just got a unique resume, a unique talent, a unique thirst for significant moments. And I'm never surprised when he smiles in the face of adversity and delivers for us as he did on Sunday night. And so thankful for that. From an injury perspective, in game, we got some bumps and bruises associated with play. And that may limit some people at the early portions of the week, but thankfully we came out of it relatively well. Everyone that returned to action last week, from TJ to Isaac Siomalu to Calvin Austin, James Pierre, Brandon Echols, all were able to participate without any steps backwards. And so thankful for that. We're a relatively healthy group as we lean in on the single elimination tournament. And so excited about that. Now I turn my attention toward Houston. Man, they're a top-notch group. They need no endorsement from me. They're winners of 9 straight. And when you win 9 straight games, there's usually a mode of operation, and it certainly is. They're a group that takes very good care of the football as a collective. I think they have 10 turnovers on the season. That's number 1 in football. I think they're number 3 with 27 takeaways on defense. And so you talk about complementary football. They got an offense that's the best in the world at securing it. They got a defense that's third best at taking it away. And I think that's the building blocks of 9 consecutive wins. I'll start first on offense. I think the strength of the pack is the pack. I think they've displayed that in a lot of ways over the course of the journey. Certainly, they went through an adjustment at the early stages of the season playing without Joe Mixon, but they've certainly found a nice division of labor in Woody Marks and Mr. Chubb. Those guys have done an awesome job in terms of dividing the labor up and running the ball for those guys. As I mentioned, their ball security is top tier. Neither one of those guys or no one in their backfield has put the ball on the ground this season. They got some quality young eligibles in Higgins and Noel from Iowa State. They've done a nice job of growing and evolving over the course of the season. They're certainly assets to their passing game and good supplements to Nico Collins. Collins is a big-time one-on-one playmaker. He's oftentimes on the backside of formations. You get in single-high defensive structure. He's in one-on-ones with corners, and he wins a lot of them. He makes the big boy catches. He can run through traffic and run the in-breaking routes. He's good down the field on 50-50 balls. He certainly has our attention as we prepare. I think they've also displayed stability and depth at the quarterback position. Got a lot of respect for C.J. Stroud and his body of work and what he's been able to do in this league over a short period of time. But I'm also very respectful of the veteran presence that Davis Mills provides. I think he went 3-0 this year as a starter. He threw 5 touchdowns and 1 interception over the course of that span. And I just think that when you're able to absorb the negativity of playing without your quarterback and maintain your offensive rhythm and take care of the football, I just think that's an asset to a collective. And to be quite honest with you, I think that 3-game stretch that he had was really the catalyst for this 9-game stretch that they're on. And when they got CJ back, they've just taken off from there. And so we certainly have some challenges in that phase. They do a nice job strategically, particularly in situations of attacking tendencies. We got to be thoughtful about repetitive calls and situational calls. They do a really good job of strategy in those kind of moments. On the defensive side of the ball, they just got a kick butt unit. They do. They got a top flight edge tandem in Hunter and Anderson. They got a top flight corner tandem on the outside. And so they rush very well. They cover very well. They're not trying to split the atom schematically. They don't have to when you have corners and edge rushers like that. I'll start first with the edge rushers. Will Anderson and Hunter are simply the most dynamic edge rush tandem in the National Football League in 2025. They got 27 sacks between them. I think it's 12 for Anderson, 15 for Hunter. They're a formidable group. You can talk about the things that you need to do schematically to minimize them and all of that. It's nothing that they haven't seen. We better stay out of a bunch of one-dimensional passing circumstances, because if we're in those circumstances, we're going to be in trouble. And that's just the reality of it. They do a good job of being aggressive and combative in coverage. They got a really good secondary. Petrie, their safety slash nickel, is very versatile, and he displays that versatility on the back end and in safety circumstances, and also in his ability to cover and blitz as a nickel. They got a real good linebacker tandem, man, that's highly active and productive. They minimize big plays. I was just looking at their statistical profile. They're top five in most statistical categories. Points, I think they're number one in yards per game. They're in the top five in rush defense and pass defense, scoring, yards. And so certainly they've been top tier and elite in just about all areas all year with that group. That group sets the pace for them. They play with great energy and emotion. They play well as a collective. They have an appetite for rising up in moments. It just seems like every week you're seeing game-changing and game-deciding plays from their defense in terms of closing close ball games out. They make the necessary plays in weighty moments, really in all three phases. I think about a third and 14, I think, versus Jacksonville, where Davis Mills scrambles into the corner of the end zone to give them a late win at home versus those guys, for example. But you don't get in this tournament unless you had your moments. You certainly don't win nine straight unless you have continuity and complementary play. They're good in all three phases. I think about D'Amico Ryans when I watched their tape and how he played the game, and a tip of the cap to him. I think the Houston Texans play collectively the way that he did. They're tough and smart. They play and play to win. They play with emotion, as I mentioned. And so, man, really excited. Don't take home playoff games for granted. Certainly don't take home Monday night playoff games for granted, man. It's an honor to be in this position, excited about it, but I and we show respect to that by training with an edge and preparing with great urgency. And I'm looking forward to a full week of doing so with our collective. Certainly awesome to have DK back. But we're not going to exhale and think that DK automatically with his presence is going to be a difference or the difference. Football is the ultimate team game. It's going to require great effort from all parties involved, but certainly excited about doing it with him. I'll pause and open it up for questions.
What did you learn about your offense, if anything, without DK?
You know, I just think sometimes when you're lacking significant players, it's opportunities for others to show what they're capable of and to accelerate growth and development and cohesion in other areas. Adam Thielen, for example, is a new acquisition for us, and he made some significant plays for us in recent weeks, and that cohesion has probably been accelerated. Scotty Miller is a guy that's always ready to make plays for us. He's not always given an opportunity, but certainly in the 2 years that he's been here, man, he's been a credible playmaker when called upon. He's displayed some of that in some significant moments over the last several weeks as well. Again, as I've mentioned, Our running backs have been a major component of our passing game in recent weeks. Maybe not down the field, but their ability to turn short into longer has bridged the gap for us in a lot of ways. I think we lead the league in yards after catch as a collective for the season, and I think the running backs are central to that. And I think we all grow as strategists. I think as a collective, as a coaching staff, when you're faced with adversity, it's important that you pivot. There's an expiration date on adjustments, and certainly we had to make some adjustments. We felt the effects of it in Cleveland, but as I mentioned, in this setting, it was reasonable to expect us all to be better, the players themselves, us as strategists, and I think we displayed that. And so hopefully returning him to the fold, we get the benefits of all the things that I've just discussed, our adaptability, the growth of individuals, the growth of continuity and new individuals, and you couple that with his presence, hopefully we're all continually, collectively better. I know it's going to be required.
How much of that, Mike, is Aaron Rodgers trusting in and believing all the other guys?
You know, certainly relationships and trust and the ability to anticipate and work with others at the quarterback receiver combination is significant. And so it's not only, DK missing games, but he missed practices and those balls go elsewhere daily in practice. And so certainly I'm sure there was some residual benefit in terms of him doing so, not only in the two games, but in the 2 weeks.
Mike, you guys, the offense struggled against the Browns. You guys were putting the effort in to stop Myles Garrett as a pass rusher. Now you're dealing with two elite edge rushing threats. How do you guys make the plan work in pass protection while not while avoiding the pitfalls that hit you guys against the Browns in the offense?
Let me be clear. I've mentioned this several times, but you guys don't seem to hear me. We didn't do anything uniquely against the Cleveland Browns from a protection standpoint that we don't always do. When we played the Cleveland Browns, we did the same thing the first time we played Cleveland. We won the game. We scored more points. He had zero sacks. And so there was no significant sea change. We certainly got a challenge this week because they have a formidable tandem. But as I mentioned, we better do a really good job of minimizing the amount we're in those one-dimensional circumstances.
Do they move those two guys around a lot, or they tend to kind of be where they are?
They move them around, but, sure, they move one to one side, they move up the other one to the other side, and so it's still big issues.
Partially where I was going with that is not just Cleveland, but like also Minnesota and Detroit are two other teams that you played against that are two of the few that have a higher sack total than yourselves and Houston. How did you feel collectively that your pass protection held up against those three teams?
I think there's no price that you can put on rush. It's probably the most significant component of good defense collectively. I think that's why the edge rushers make what they make globally. They might be the highest paid position in our sport outside of quarterback. And so anytime you have a significant rush, it is a challenge for the opposing offensive unit. That's why we value top end rushmen and depth at that position. I'm sure that's why some of the teams that you mentioned do as well. And so it certainly is a challenge, but it's certainly not a new challenge. Our unit and units face it week in and week out because it is that significant in today's game. The weightiest downs are generally one-dimensional passing moments. Those guys, more than top-flight cover guys, have an impact on what goes down in those moments. And so we got our work cut out for us. It's certainly going to require some strategy. But as I continually mentioned, minimizing those moments, being in manageable one-dimensional passing down moments where you can maybe throw the ball shorter and let legs do some of the work and things of that nature is a major component of minimizing their impact on the game.
Mike, what have you seen from your team in terms of how they bounce back from adversity, whether it be in the middle of a game or week to week, especially down the stretch?
You know, we generally have, but we're not patting ourselves on the back for that. That is required in this game and particularly at the highest level and doubly so as the road gets narrow. You're certainly not getting into this tournament and you're certainly not going to be in this tournament long based on talent alone. There has to be some substance. There has to be an intangible quality, a display of individual and collective will. And certainly we have a collective that's capable of doing that. But as I've mentioned many times, we not only work at developing that individually and collectively, but it's really the building block of team building for us. We look for good men that love football, that enjoy the process, that enjoy the drudgery, that got great relationships with the game, and I think that aids us in doing so.
With the lack of playoff success over the last eight seasons, what would a win on Monday mean to this organization?
You know, it's not about the organization or myself. It's about this collective. And quite frankly, most of these men don't care about the last whatever years that you mentioned. Most of them are new to us. And so that's where my focus is. I'm certainly not going to, unpack my bags on the collective's bed, if you will. I'm excited about doing it this week with this collective.
One of the guys who has mentioned, though, that it means a lot to him is Cam Hayward, that he wants to join the guys like Brett Kiesel and Aaron Smith and make a run in the playoffs. What would it mean for a guy like him or the guys who have been around here a long time to end that streak?
I'll let him and TJ speak for themselves in that regard, but most of the other 51, is less significant.
Looking back at the recent playoff games, the first quarter's been outscored by a lot. What have you guys learned looking back at that? Is there a trend or anything?
I don't know that I've analyzed it in that way. As I mentioned, man, so many of these guys don't share that experience, and so it's less relevant. I'm really just trying to put together a good plan for this collective in an effort to combat what we anticipate getting from Houston this week.
Have you had a chance to talk to DK yet, and where do you see him at mentally right now?
I think he's in a great place. I am. I know that he's happy to be back. He's happy to be in this tournament, and he's ready to go to work.
Mike, I can't say one of the things that he really appreciates that you do is how choose and pick when, what pots to stir, what bears to poke throughout the week to get the right responses out of guys. How do you go about like finding that week to week with who you want to kind of get under?
I think it's my job to provide individuals and the collective what it is they need. And so I don't know that I come in with a specific agenda. It's my job to listen and to watch and to do what's required for those people. And I think that's the spirit in which I go about it.
Mike, you mentioned the play of the defensive line on Sunday. Where have you seen Keanu specifically really take a step this year?
You know, I think he's whooping blocks and making tackles. There's a difference between being active and productive. And certainly he's athletic and active. And there's a lot about his profile that was really attractive, even dating back to draft evals. I love the heavyweight wrestler, for example, and he certainly was a formidable heavyweight wrestler in high school. Those guys generally are better conditioned than most men their size. They have an appetite for working through fatigue that's a little bit different than others. And so certainly he brings some of those things, but I just think there's been an increase in productivity. And certainly we love activity, but productivity trumps activity. And I think he's taken a big step this year in terms of productivity. He's got 5.5 sacks. He's coming off blocks in the run game and winning. Shedding and tackling is a major component of run productivity. And I think his arrow pointed up for him in just about all areas of his game, which leads to more productivity.
Mike, after the game, the cameras caught a cool moment between you and Aaron Rodgers at midfield. Just what's the importance of the head coach-quarterback relationship, and how has that relationship grown or evolved throughout this season?
You know, it's very important because they're unique jobs. I think we got to be connected. There's a loneliness with leadership. There's a responsibility with leadership. And so I've just learned over the years to embrace that component of it, that we got to spend time together. We got to have an understanding. And certainly that's been a fun process with Aaron. It's been really fun because he has an appetite for it. He loves the process as much as he loves competing. He's got an awesome relationship with football. He's at the point in his career where he's really reflective and excited about giving back to the game and the young people in the game. And so it's fun to do that with him and help young guys like Will Howard advance in his career. And so it's been an enjoyable process, but certainly it's work. We respect it in that way. And certainly we respect the work that's in front of us this week in terms of leading this group.
I apologize. When you look back and review the tape, what led to sort of Baltimore's ability to kind of get behind you guys defensively?
You know, I think Lamar, first and foremost, on a lot of fronts, he makes you do some things schematically that could make you uncomfortable. But if you're trying to win moments in the game, you do what you have to do. But also his just unique talents. I mean, one of those touchdowns, we had two of our you know, most significant guys had him wrapped up in the backfield, and somehow he came out of Benton and Highsmith and threw a long touchdown. And so his talents were directly impactful. His talents also dictate schematics at times. And so succinctly, I can just say Lamar Jackson.
So that, to my follow-up was, you view it as more of a Lamar issue as opposed to sort of the problems in an execution standpoint on the back end.
You know, certainly we could execute better. Certainly we could put him in better calls. That was all a component of my opening statement.
Mike, Herbig was good rushing, blitzing from the inside. Does it take a special skill set for a guy who can rush from the edge and jump in inside and do the same thing?
It does. He was one of those interesting hybrid athletes, if you will. We studied him when he came out. We didn't know if he would be an inside backer or an outside backer. He has that versatility, and so we put that versatility on display at times in an effort to get, you know, TJ and Highsmith and Herbig on the grass together, and his versatility kind of allows some of that to happen. But we move all three of those guys around. All three of those guys will play that hybrid position from time to time in an effort to maybe get matched up on a running back. And to be quite honest with you, if you get edge rushman on a running back, you view that as a strategic advantage, and certainly he confirmed that when he got on the back on Sunday night.
You touched on it briefly in your opening statement, but what does it mean to this organization to finally have a home playoff game, home field advantage, your home fans here?
You know, I don't know that we're big picture in anything right now. We just got a big week ahead of us. We got big days ahead of us, and that's just kind of where we are. That reflective big picture stuff is just not realistic as I stand here. I understand why you asked the question, but when you're in it, I just think your perspective is a lot different.
Mike, you guys went 9 of 16 on third down. A lot of those came in the second half. It was Aaron throwing, being able to throw the ball downfield. What did you guys capture against the Ravens that you guys can replicate or need to replicate to continue that in the playoffs?
You know, we're never trying to replicate things. Variables are different week in and week out. What the Ravens did schematically in those circumstances might be dramatically different than what Houston might do. And so I just think week in and week out, you got to win the moments. And certainly we have a mode of operation in terms of winning the moments. We won a bunch of third and longs in Detroit, for example. But those were different types of third and longs that we won than we won third and 10, third and 9, third and 8 versus Baltimore. And so it's about winning those moments and understanding what this week requires, and certainly it probably is going to be different. And so it's not building upon, it's just simply readdressing the situation in an effort to highlight our talents, individuals, and keep the ball rolling.
What's special about Aaron to be able to win in all those different varieties of moments that you're talking about?
You know, we could talk all day about that, man. He's got a 21-year resume in that regard.
Do you recall how long ago quarterbacks started wearing the wrist plates? And is it impressive to you that Aaron doesn't need them or want them?
Man, I don't know, man. That's been going on for generations. Man, I remember my quarterback wearing it in college in the 90s. And so I don't, you know, that's old news.
Not too many don't wear them.
Yeah, but I think, again, if you've been on the job 20-plus years, you know, you don't need the cheat sheet.
Mike, was that issue just an equipment issue when he didn't have communication? Was a mic shut off? Do you know?
We had coach-to-player communication issues.
Mike, one of the things that Aaron mentioned after the game was that he was grateful that you and the organization let him be himself completely. Why is it important for you to let a player be themselves instead of trying to fit them, you know, into a role or into a box?
I just think if you're going to get the best out of someone, particularly someone that's in a leadership position, they got to do it in a natural way in their voice. And so, you know, you're cutting their leadership legs out from under them when you're asking them to be somebody they're not or to not do things in a real natural and organic sort of way. And so I think it's negligent to ask him to be anything other than himself.
Was that something that when, you know, you're recruiting him in the free agency that you said to him there that, hey, if you come here, we're going to let you be you?
I think a component of those questions were answered before we even talked. I think he wouldn't have been interested in us unless he knew that about us. We don't keep any secrets in that regard. It not only applies to him, but it applies to everyone. As I mentioned, we value good men that have great relationships with football. And when you value those things, why not let guys be themselves?
I know you weren't really a draftable position for C.J. Stroud, but what did you remember about him coming out of Ohio State, his development arc over these first 3 years? Is it along the lines of what you anticipated?
Again, I was a bystander because I wasn't in draft position. And I remember specifically being at his pro day and around his pro day. It was just so much more work for me to do with the multitude of others that were coming out. I probably wouldn't give him a fair assessment. And that happens sometimes. We had a place like Ohio State, and there's so much to comb through in terms of the depth of the talent and the amount of talent. I don't waste a lot of time on guys that I know realistically don't have a chance to come into our range, if you will.
Mike, just what a game you got. We're down 10-0. Is getting off to the conventional wisdom will say, cliche, get off to a fast start is important in the playoffs. But you talk about winning moments more than that, or is how much of an emphasis is or importance is to?
I'm certainly not opposed to getting off to a fast start, but a fast start or a slow start doesn't ensure us of anything, positively or negatively. And I just think that, you know, we understand that, but you still don't want to minimize the importance of bursting out of the locker room in a single elimination tournament.
Mike, how was it that Cam became the guy that replaced Darnell in the Pittsburgh plunge and the tush push, whatever you want to call it?
We had a big guy, and so we needed a big guy, and very few come bigger than Cam.
Does it say something, though? You talk about leadership. I mean, Cam pretty much does whatever you guys ask. Heck, the first play, he gets dinged by Pierre because he's 30 yards downfield chasing a guy. What kind of example does that set for the rest of your group, especially because you know how much it means to Cam specifically because he's been here for so long?
He's had a special career. It needs no endorsement from me. He displays why it's special, not only every weekend, but every day. He is a Steeler through and through. He just is. I just saw him a few minutes ago in there taking care of himself, getting ready for the week. He cares hard. He's got big shoulders. He wants the responsibility of leading. He got trained by some awesome men a football generation ago. I love having reunion weekends and seeing Cam's former teammates here. I love messing with him that way. But those guys in the those middle-aged guys, guys like Casey Hampton and Brett Kiesel and Aaron Smith, they view Cam's career with great pride. Because they were impactful in terms of his growth and development. And it's cool from their perspective to watch him do it with young guys like Derek Harmon and Y.A. Black, for example.
You've talked about your appreciation for NFL brothers like TJ, JJ, and Derek and the connection they have and how they push each other. What did you make of the first tush push? Connor was kind of mad at Cam because he's like, he got to me too early.
I'll leave that between them. Connor wasn't so strong in game. He wanted me to relay the coaching point to his brother. But that's the nature of their relationship. Cam is the big brother.
Mike, Jalen Warren might not be a household name. I mean, even in the old running back room, Kenny won the MVP. But what has he meant to this offense, Warren?
You know, his contributions have been immense, to be quite honest with you. He's highly competitive. He's tough. He's really consistent. As I've mentioned, he's good in the backfield. He's good out of the backfield in the passing game. I don't think it's a knock against him that Kenny won MVP. I think it was a totality of Kenny's contributions. You know, Kenny is a significant contributor to special teams. He's returned kicks all year. He's been on kickoff team and other components of the units. And so it's more of a tip of the cap to Kenny than a slight to Jalen.
Anyone else? All right.
Thanks.
All right, there you have it. And what stands out in all of that, and it was lighthearted at times, fun, interesting, is that the Steelers are a healthy team going into the playoffs. When was the last time that happened? Somebody tell me, even last year, you could tell that TJ and Cam were both banged up going into the playoffs. This is a healthy football team right now. It's a team on a roll. They've won 4 of 5. If they had DK Metcalf, it would be 5 of 5 right? They'd be on a 5-game winning streak right now, not to mention Watt missed that game in Cleveland too. It's a healthy team. It's getting its most explosive offensive player back. Its most explosive defensive player is a week healthier. Yes, I'm swigging the Kool-Aid. Yes, I am. In terms of news from that, really not a lot that I heard. How about you, Limits?
Yeah, I thought there was some fascinating things about what he said about just Rodgers in general and also the relationship that he has with Cam Hayward and stuff like that. Just Tomlin being reflective on not fully saying how much the moment means, but saying it in his own colorful way.
Man, for me, it's the health. It's the health of the team. Came out of it relatively well, he said. The Ravens game from TJ to Isaac to Calvin Austin, Juan Pierre. Limits leadoff hitter.
Really, of all time.
That's
one of
Juan
the best
Thornhill.
Of all time. Juan Thornhill.
And Echols. Everybody's healthy here, including the ancient quarterback.
Wasn't Juan Pierre like a third baseman for the Dodgers?
No, he was a center fielder for somebody in leadoff, but that's beside the point.
Okay.
If you would have told me at the beginning of the year that they would have a home playoff game with all of their older players, and a lot of the significant ones are 30 and well beyond in some cases, ready to go and looking pretty good, I would have said, man, sign me up for that right now. And that appears to be the case. And that is a big, big deal. Do you know what exercise I was just engaged in, oh, Limitless Wonder?
No.
And it's a good one. And we're going to do it with Brian Batko. Oh, are we going to do it? Rank the playoff coaches in the AFC. Do you like that, Limits?
I do like that.
Yes, you do like that. Who would you rank number one? Wrong.
Probably Sean Payton.
Sean Payton. I think I would. I see. Well, let's talk about this next with Batko, because I've got a whole thing here. I think there's different tiers. I think there's similar categories here, Limits. And I know you're talking to somebody who just walked in the room.
I'm talking to Marty Tupper, who you talked to earlier.
But you and I are doing a radio show together. So maybe if he could hold off. What, when I ripped him earlier?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was funny. It was fun. And the tiers are Sean Payton and Tomlin belong in one. Guys who have been around, done a lot of winning, won a Super Bowl.
Hold on, you're putting Tomlin in the top tier?
I didn't say top tier.
Okay.
I might. I don't know yet. I'm saying there's groupings where guys are similar. Him and Peyton have similar profiles. Harbaugh, Vrabel, McDermott, similar profiles. They've won more than they've lost for sure, but they're all right around 500 in the playoffs, and none of them have finished the job, correct? Then you have Liam Cohen and D'Amico Ryans, both guys young, both guys winning. Ryans already has 2 playoff wins, 2 division titles in his first 2 years. Now he's a wild card in the third year. Those two belong in the same category. This is getting mighty interesting. Limits, you failed to inform me how long the Batconian Mongoose is staying.
That's because he hasn't told me.
Is he there?
Yeah, let's ask him.
Well, wait a second. Why didn't you ask him? Don't blame him. He's not going
to
say, oh, hi, Limits. I'll be on for 2 segments today.
What I wanted to do was back Brian into a corner where if I don't ask him, maybe he wouldn't feel entitled to join us for 2.
Well, it's going
to
be awkward either way when we ask him on live radio. How long are you with us, Mongoose?
You don't want to back a mongoose into a corner. You could get your face ripped off for doing something like that, Limits. No, I mean, he didn't ask me. I think he would have, but we were making small talk about television shows and reality stars, so we didn't get around to it. But I think if you guys are nice to me, I can probably stick around for a second one.
That'd be great. What stood out to you about the Tomlin news conference? That's why we pay you the big bucks to come on. Brian Batko of the Post-Gazette.
What stuck out to me, Joe, is Mike Tomlin's just like me. When he gets to a hotel room, he puts his suitcase on the bed and he unpacks on the bed. Maybe he hangs up some of his collared shirts and, you know, his blazer and his pants, and certainly takes out the dress shoes. But yeah, because when he said he's not going to unpack his baggage on the collective's bed, I thought, huh, he's in that same state of mind when he travels. I like that.
Yes. And he also, that was the same thing. One of the same things that stood out to me was, digging a little deeper on that. His 8-year drought of winning a playoff game or really even come close to winning. He doesn't want to put on the collective, as he said. And that
he's used that line before.
Yeah, he used the exact same line last year.
And I think Cam Hayward said last year, we're playing with house money. And, you know, they lost. So they're both reminders of how long the Steelers have been on this treadmill, hamster wheel, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I was going to say, though, it doesn't really feel as much like Groundhog Day because of the way that they got in this year. They didn't back in. They had to beat the Ravens to do it. So I'm not considering last week a playoff win, but yes, it feels like they're bringing more momentum into the field and
better health.
They get to do it at home, which is different.
Yeah, a lot of things are. I mean, everything's different to me. Different quarterback than lately. They're healthy. They're at home, and they're not facing an elite MVP type quarterback. I mean, you couldn't ask for bigger differences than a lot of their recent playoff games, could you?
Well, they're 10-7 again. So in that sense, they're kind of the same old Steelers of this, what do you always call it? High end mediocrity.
Yes.
Joe. So there's that CJ Stroud. Yeah. I don't think anybody would put him in the same tier as Mahomes, Allen, or even Lamar, but it'll be interesting for me to see like, hey, is this going to be another game where the stark reality is you don't have one of the up and coming stars at quarterback in the AFC. And you're reminded of that in the first round of the playoffs, in the wild card round. So that stands out to me as a juicy subplot as well.
Limits, why don't you play a couple of clips from the Tomlin news conference, and we'll give the mongoose center stage here.
I'd love to. I first would like to bring this to your attention, Brian, because Tomlin does not like when Myles Garrett is brought to his.
Mike, you guys, the offense struggled against the Browns. You guys were putting the effort in to stop Myles Garrett as a pass rusher. Now you're dealing with two elite edge rushing threats. How do you guys make the plan work in pass protection while not sack the world, while avoiding the pitfalls that hit you guys against the Browns in the offense?
Let me be clear. I've mentioned this several times, but you guys don't seem to hear me. We didn't do anything uniquely against the Cleveland Browns from a protection standpoint that we don't always do. When we played the Cleveland Browns, we did the same thing the first time we played Cleveland. We won the game. We scored more points. He had zero sacks. And so there was no significant sea change. We certainly got a challenge this week because they have a formidable tandem. But as I mentioned, we better do a really good job of minimizing the amount we're in those one-dimensional circumstances.
Brian?
Is that one of those Shakespeare, thou doth protest too much type of answers there, right? I think I made this point last week on the show with Austin, but like, I think there's a little bit of a sliver of truth in between. Yeah, you did nothing different schematically versus the Cleveland side of it, which is, oh, you changed your whole game plan to keep this guy out of the box score. I think there's a gray area. There's a middle of the Venn diagram where, yes, the Steelers did what they often do to try to minimize Garrett like they did in that first game. But that Aaron Rodgers himself was sort of making some decisions of, I'm not even going to attempt to extend this play or hold on to this ball a little longer for something to develop, because we can get out of here with a win and we can get out of here without Garrett getting that record on us and potentially knocking me out of the rest of the season with a sack. So I get what Tomlin's saying, but yeah, that struck me. I'm glad you played that clip, Limits, because that is one thing that stood out to me, the way that he kind of not jumped on Chris Carter's question there, but he clearly bristled at the line of questioning yet again.
I mean, go tell Myles Garrett that. Go tell Brian Baldinger. Go tell
Chris Sims.
Go tell.
He's got no dog in the fight.
A lot of different people who said they look to be more interested in avoiding the sack record than winning the game. Obviously, everybody wants to block Myles Garrett, right? Well, it seems to me that other teams like the Patriots basically said he's going to get his and so will we. We're not going to alter things to a ridiculous point. I don't know. Did Kenny Gainwell in the first matchup sacrifice himself as much to blocking and chipping Garrett as he did in the second one? I honestly don't know the answer to that question. Seemed a little odd. Seemed a little odd on third and four late in the game when you need to win to run the ball with Gainwell on the far opposite side where Myles Garrett is. You don't even risk a pass and you do a running play on a situation third and four that's almost 100% pass in the NFL. Some things seemed very odd in that game, But who cares? We're on to the playoffs.
Yeah, we don't need to relitigate that. It comes down to the Texans' pass rush giving them trouble
from both sides. Right.
This week.
Yeah. All right, Limits, what's next for the Batconian Mongoose?
Yeah.
First, I'm sorry. Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Cloudy, 85% chance of rain, high of 49, Dwayne Woodruff. Wow. A low of 31, Donnie Shell. Fan weather brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions, Mr. P.
So one player that's gotten, I think, significantly better as the season has gone on, a couple of bumps in the road, is Keanu Benton, and Mike Tomlin definitely thinks that's the case.
This was good.
You mentioned the play of the defensive line on Sunday. Have you seen Keanu specifically really take a step this year?
You know, I think he's whooping blocks and making tackles. There's a difference between being active and productive. And certainly he's athletic and active. And there's a lot about his profile that was really attractive, even dating back to draft evals. I love the heavyweight wrestler, for example, and he certainly was a formidable heavyweight wrestler in high school. Those guys generally are better conditioned than most men their size. They have an appetite for working through fatigue that's a little bit different than others. And so certainly he brings some of those things, but I just think there's been an increase in productivity. And certainly we love activity, but productivity trumps activity. And I think he's taken a big step this year in terms of productivity. He's got 5.5 sacks. He's coming off blocks in the run game and winning. Shedding and tackling is a major component of run productivity. And I think his arrow pointed up for him in just about all areas of his game, which leads to more productivity.
Goose?
Or maybe it's just having Derek Harmon next to him. The only thing that was missing from that answer was Mike Tomlin taking another dig at the Harmon narratives. But yeah, I think he's right in that Benton's gotten a lot better over the course of the season. I thought he was struggling early on in the year against the run. He had some really nice flashes against the pass. I think back to that Vikings game where he was just dominating in Dublin. But I thought teams were taking advantage of him on the ground. And when he talks about destroying blocks, I think that's his way of saying, yeah, he's been less of a liability when teams want to just run it up the gut on us. So credit to Benton for the development. And I don't know that we've talked, and the coaches too, and I don't know if we've talked much about the future for him. We've talked a lot, I think, about Joey Porter Jr. potentially getting an extension this offseason. But obviously Benton in that same draft class, what will they decide to do with him? That remains to be seen, especially with a couple rookies coming up in the pipeline as well.
Yeah, the more I think about it, Brian, as we all know, there's only so much money to go around. I think the guy who could be left out in the cold here because he merits a big fifth year is Broderick Jones. And these other guys that we're talking about are going to get theirs. And he's not. That's what I think anyway. That makes sense to me. Well, you?
Well, yeah, I mean, the fifth year does, it changes the calculus a little bit, but only if you pick it up. And I don't really
think
they're in a position to do that with the way that he's played. And then, you know, you hope that neck injury can be as routine as a neck injury and subsequent surgery can possibly be. But, you know, it's still a health concern going into next year. And obviously, you know, Dylan Cook has had a good string of games at left tackle. So, yeah, I mean, that class, it'll be interesting to see how the chips fall there. As much as I've liked Benton's improvement over the course of this year, I don't know that I'd be rushing to go out and sign him. That's a position that commands a lot of money in today's NFL. And you've got Derek Harmon waiting in the wings to be kind of the Batman to, or the Robin to Cam Hayward's Batman. And you've got Y.A. Black, who can maybe develop into a starter based on some of what we saw in training camp and things of that nature. So, yeah, we'll see with Benton. I'd prioritize an extension for Joey Porter Jr. over him still, I think.
That's a pretty good question moving forward. Okay. Brian, are you up for this? A little homework assignment during our very brief intermission, because we are going to rank the AFC playoff quarterbacks and the AFC playoff coaches. And I'll tell you, I've been trying to do this while you were talking, and I'm having trouble. Obviously, I'll just say the candidates. The quarterbacks are C.J. Stroud, Bo Nix, Trevor Lawrence, Rodgers, Herbert, May, and Allen. The coaches are Peyton, Tomlin, Harbaugh, Vrabel, McDermott, Cohen, and Ryans. This is not easy. I'm telling you right now, this is not an easy exercise. Yes, Josh Allen is the best quarterback. At least I think that's what everyone will say. But after that, Well, you've got some work to do, Mongoose. I hope you have a writing utensil or a computer handy. Limits, I know you do. We'll do all of
that. It's all up here.
We'll do all of that. Joe.